Hey everybody, Jeff here, and I am happy to report that Your Move is expanding our TV broadcast to a brand new city. And it's not just any city. It's the city that performs an average of 315 weddings per day. It's the city that shines brighter than any other city on Earth, when seen from outer space. It's the city that never uses dice with rounded corners. It's the city that never sleeps. Figured it out? That's right. Your Move is now airing on NBC after Saturday Night Live in Las Vegas, Nevada. And we could not be more excited. And we have you to thank. Your continued support and financial generosity is helping us reach more people in more cities. So from Andy and everyone on the Your Move team, thank you. Now, we realize this question may seem rhetorical, but do you have friends or family in Las Vegas whose lives would change if they started making better decisions? If so, perhaps you could help them find Your Move, now airing on NBC after SNL. We really do believe that the next 30 minutes will help you make better decisions and live with fewer regrets. So today, we're going to hear a special interview with Andy Stanley on the topics of love, sex, and dating.
Single Series, please help me welcome Andy Stanley. Well, first things first, I guess the first question I have to ask you is, did you have a pickup line when you met Sandra? I mean, we want to know. We're dying to know.
It's a long time ago, Joseph. But actually, I kind of did. Well, Sandra and I, our first date was a blind date.
Okay.
This friend of ours just insisted I ask her out. He was talking to her about me and me about her. This was, you know, there was not an internet. So this was as close as we got to internet dating. Somebody actually knew both of us.
Yeah.
And matched us dot nothing. Just matched anyway. Dot, okay. So just insisted. She was 8 years younger. I'm like, that's creepy, you know. I don't want to be that guy. Yeah. And she was in college, and I had like a job and a condo and a car and all that stuff.
Okay.
And he's like, you gotta ask her out. And I kept saying, well, she's so great, you ask her out. He's like, I don't think she's interested. So anyway, so I go to a dorm, Georgia Tech dorm, and pick her up. And really, I did not know what she looked like. It was really a blind date. It's true.
That's so anyway, different now. Facebook, we like to check that beforehand.
Yeah. So I am in the car. I'm 8 years older. She's like a college student. I'm like, I have a job and stuff. And so she was real quiet and said there was really, 10 minutes and we were all talked out. That was it. We're going to we're going to go eat at a friend's house, and he had killed some deer, whatever you call that. We're eating dead deer.
Yeah, so. I've done it before in a day.
I'm not a hunter, so anyway. But anyway, to your question. So honestly, I'm out of stuff to talk about, and out of my mouth came this question, and I didn't plan it, and you can use this. And I said to her, and I wasn't trying to be cute. I didn't have anything else to say. I said, have you ever done any modeling?
Good job.
It just came out of my mouth.
So I guess a great place for us to start is we're sitting in this room, and there's so many people from different walks of life. And I mean, you're now off the market. You've been off the market for pretty long time. And you don't go on any more dates anymore. So tell us why a room full of singles like myself, what gives you the credibility to talk on dating?
Well, that's a fair question. I'm not a psychologist. I'm not a psychiatrist. I'm not a doctor. I didn't even make nurse. Okay? So I'm a pastor. And I'm not the only one. I don't have the corner on the market. I don't have any original insights. I have nothing original. But I just am so passionate because I think some simple things relationally make a huge, huge difference. And I think in most cases relationally, and this may be an overstatement, I think in most cases we can see trouble coming if we are willing to look. And my estimation of so many marriages that are in trouble or dating relationships that go bad or people who have struggles dating, I think sometimes we're dishonest with ourselves. We'll talk about that maybe in a few minutes. We talk ourselves into stuff, then we get wound up in stuff, and off we go. So I have no qualifications at all, zero qualified, but I'm compassionate and I'm passionate about this. And any opportunity I have to say, here's some things that maybe you haven't thought about, or maybe because you're in a relationship and it's so emotional, you know, it's kind of fogged out the common sense. So those are my qualifications.
We have a lot of people in the room, and they're looking for their significant other, that person. Maybe it's a boy, maybe it's a girl, or should I say a man or lady. And so looking for the one, and I guess the great place to start, did you think Sandra was the one? Was she the one to you? And the one being that special someone that perfectly, you know, there's only one person made for you. Would you say that?
No, she's not here. So, Here's what I think. I think I know what you're asking. You're basically asking, is there like one right person
for everyone? Is there one right person for everyone?
And the answer is yes and no. When you fall in love, the answer is yes. Until you fall in love, the answer is no. The real problem with the one, you know, there's one person for me, is it feeds what I call the right person myth. And this is a huge, huge deal I love to talk about. The right person myth is when I meet the right person, everything will be all right. When I meet the right person, everything will be all right. So what happens is when we date, and I did this, we all did this. When you date, you're looking for the right person, which isn't bad because what's the alternative? To look for the
wrong person. Right.
And you've all done that, okay? So it's better to look for the right person than the wrong person. But when we look for the right person, the myth, the thing that feeds this myth is once I meet the right person, everything will turn out right. And that's absolutely a lie because every single person who's ever said I do felt like they were said I do to the right person and it didn't turn out right. And then in some cases, they went looking for the next right person or the right, next right person was in the, you know, the cube right next to them. Anyway,
right.
And so I don't believe there's one right person for everybody. And I think it's dangerous to think in those terms because, again, we think all I have to do is meet the right person, everything will turn out right. And that's not the case because, as we've talked about before in a different context, it's more about becoming the right person than finding the right person. And two people who are focused on becoming the right person, when they meet, things generally turn out all right. That was a long answer to
that
question.
That's good. And it's good. I guess the tension that probably a lot of people are feeling with that answer is, although it is great, I think when you're searching for the right person and becoming the right person is wonderful, but dating is real and getting out there. And so if you feel that way, then what is the appropriate way to date? I mean, do you go out every Friday? Do you say yes to a certain amount of guys and limit the dating? I mean, if you're just supposed to be focusing on becoming the one, do we just sit at home and just wait for the sky to open up and drop that person off?
I mean, I've met so many couples who, you know, met online and met through, you know, dating services. So I think people ask me that sometimes, like, what do you think? I think it's great. And I think part of it is, and you know this because you guys are all in that world. In fact, I've heard some really wild stories, but that are kind of fun, you know. But the whole idea of being able to meet someone that's a profile before you see them, physically meet them, I think there's a huge advantage of that because, you know, you look at your values and her values and or his values, however it goes, because you know this, when you meet someone who's real like, you know, it's like you're willing to change your values, you know, so what are your values? Mine too. So I think the whole profile thing, I just think it's such a powerful tool, so I say go for that.
Let's go ahead and turn the corner because this was a really, really popular question, so less of the softballs and a little bit more of the hard pitches here. One of the most popular decisions with dating couples is actually living together. Thinking of the couple that's moving or planning to move in together because they are going to get married or they have the intentions to get married.
They're trying it out.
What would you say to them?
I would say that's a bad idea because that is the equivalent. I'm trying to follow. That's the equivalent of driving around without a seatbelt knowing there's a 70% chance that you're going to have a wreck. It's not the equivalent of driving around without a seatbelt. It's the equivalent of driving around without a seatbelt, knowing there's about a 70% chance you're going to have a wreck. Nobody would do that. Now, here's why what I'm about to say isn't going to move the dial for anybody, because I'm going to give you some statistics. And the problem is, you know this, you're not a statistic, right? Have you ever made a decision based on statistics? It's like, you know, I really, really, really want to do that, but statistics say, so I realize this isn't going to make any difference, but you should know this. And so the reason I'm against you moving in together is because the statistics don't lie, and you will probably become a statistic. So listen to this. The divorce rate among couples who live together before they get married, the divorce rate for couples who live together before they get married is 50 to 80% higher than the national average. And the national average is already close to 50%. So it's 50 to 80% higher than the national average. So it is almost over before you begin. The odds of you moving in together and then being happily married are so small, it's just not worth it. Now, again, you think you're going to, you know, be the exception to the rule. We all do. Every dumb thing we've ever done, we did it based on everybody else gets caught, everybody else gets in trouble, but I'm not. The other thing, and this is staggering as well. In fact, this is really staggering. The odds of someone in that relationship being unfaithful, the statistics for infidelity for couples who live together before they get married, get this, are twice to eight times as high as the national average. Now, in every marriage, there is the possibility that somebody's going to be unfaithful. But in marriages where the couple lived together before they got married, the odds of infidelity for the man or the woman is twice to eight times as high. So just knowing that, again, you know, you're going to be the exception. But the truth is, you know, the deck is so stacked against you. I just think it's a bad idea. Mm. Now, and you know, while we're on the subject, Joseph, see, you're unique, you're one of a kind, we're all of one of a kind, but our story is not one of a kind. You remember at the beginning when I said, hey, after I heard a whole bunch of stories, I decided there's just like three or four stories, the names change. Mm-hmm. So what happens is, when you hear statistics like this, we retreat to the fact that we're unique, our relationship is unique. It's not. I hate to burst your bubble. God loves you, you are unique, but your experience and your relationship is not unique. So we are foolish to ignore these kinds of statistics. So again, I it's just a bad idea. Not because I think it's a bad idea, it's just a bad idea.
Mm. Yeah. I want to make sure I ask you this one because it was a really popular one. Dating a boyfriend and girlfriend, when should the relationship become physical? How soon is too soon?
Again, no one's going to take my advice, but I'll tell you what I think.
We want to know. We want to know.
Let me tell you what I've never heard. I've never heard, and I've heard a lot of things, I've never heard, you know what? You know what our problem was? We waited too long to get physical. You know, our root problem was, I mean, we dated for about 3 months before he held my hand, you know, and then but 4 months and he finally kissed me. And I'm telling you, if we had jumped in the sack, I'm saying maybe in the first couple weeks, we would have made it. Never heard that. But how many times have I heard you heard, and how much of a story is it for you that, I mean, when we met, it was like chemistry, chemistry, chemistry. It had to be God's will. No one's ever felt this way before.
Ever.
Never. I mean, I know what my mama, not my daddy, certainly not my mama, my daddy, but you know, no one's ever felt this way before. And so the chemistry is so powerful. This just has to be right. So of course the tendency is to to make it physical quick. That there is no win in jumping in, okay? There is no win in jumping in physically. And I didn't mean to be cute, but it's true. And here's why. Romance, which is an awesome thing, romance is a fog. It's supposed to be a fog. And romance just gets jacked up even higher when you start touching. And the more you touch, here's what happens. You know, it's all relational, a little bit of physical. Physical goes up, relational goes down. Physical goes up, relational goes down. Next thing you know, we eat real quick and just get home as fast as we can. And, you know, you've been in those relationships. It flips. So the longer you can postpone the physical, I just don't think you're ever going to regret that. And here's some really bummer bad news, okay? You are sexually compatible with millions and millions and millions of people. You are. You are sexually compatible with millions and millions of people.
It's good to know.
It's so simple. You are not relationally compatible with as many people as you are sexually compatible. And nobody needs to write this down. Figuring sex out is easy. Middle schoolers do it. I have a friend, she asks, you know, young ladies this question all the time. A young lady comes and says, oh, I'm so in love. And she says, what do you love about him? What do you love about him? Because once things get sexual, I'm telling you, sexual covers a multitude of relational deficiencies. Sexual activity covers a multitude of relational deficiencies. So consequently, if you want a relationship that results in great sex, then you've got to camp out on becoming a person that knows how to have a great relationship and building a great relationship. Because again, I know you know this, sexual compatibility is not the litmus test for relational compatibility. Sexual compatibility is not the litmus test for relational compatibility. It's the other way around. And great sex is connected to intimacy, and the most satisfying sexual relationships are within the context of relationships. Every statistic says this. I know if you're single, you can't imagine this to be true. The people who are most satisfied with sex are married. Now we think Mary, we think of our parents. We're thinking, ah, there's two things he didn't have any of, sex and money. You know, that's what we think about our parents. But again, I have to look at you through the lens of reality and statistics. And statistics will again tell you, even though I know nobody's a statistic, that ultimately what you hope to experience sexually is really only found within the context of a strong relationship. So you got to load up on the relationship factor. That's why I say put the physical off as long as possible.
That's good. I mean, I think talking about the relationships and talking about the stats is really good, but this is an actual really, really popular question. So since we're here and since you seem like you kind of cracked the door, I'm just going to go ahead and walk right in it. Since you do have the opinion as far as living together is not necessarily a wise decision, I'm guessing you probably do have an opinion about sleeping together. So do you care to share your thoughts about sex?
At every angle, at every corner, anywhere you turn, the sexual component of a relationship has to be couched within the context of a relationship. So when you ask me, you know, what do I think about sex? Here's kind of the answer to that question. Let me put it this way. If sex was just physical and sex was not reproductional, I'm not even sure that's a word. If sex was just physical, reproductional. If sex was just physical and not reproductional, then my answer would be whatever, you know, it's like anything else. Just go have a good time and, you know, whatever. But because sex is not just physical, which we'll talk about in a second, and because sex is reproductional, then I think you handle sex with care. You have to handle sex with care. It's fragile. Now here, this is kind of the deep part, and I don't want to get weird and freak anybody out or make anybody uncomfortable, but I need to say this because, again, it's just words, and then we all walk out and go back to our lifestyles. 100% of the portrayals and, 100% of the conversation, the music, and the culture around sex presents sex is 100% physical, and it's not. And when you treat sex as if it's only physical, you hurt yourself. Now, let me give you the extreme examples, and we got to move on because this is complicated. If you have experienced sexual abuse, you know that is far different than verbal abuse. It is even far different than just physical abuse. There is a huge difference between a woman being mugged and beat up and a woman being raped. It is much different for a little boy to be verbally abused, to be physically abused versus being sexually abused. Why? Why is there such a big difference? Why would we never in 1,000 years say to someone who had been sexually abused, well, just get over it? Even saying that makes me cringe to hear myself. Just move on. Just kind of get it. Why? Because we all know enough about sexual abuse to know it's not the physical. It's deeper than that. And here's why. Because we are sexual beings, and our sexuality is as much a part of who you are as anything else. Your ability to experience intimacy with one other person is tied to your sexuality. Your ability to experience like the ultimate, are you kidding me? I didn't even know such a thing existed. Intimacy is tied to your sexuality. And what people who have experienced extreme sexual disruption will tell you, like some of you have, is that later in life, what do they have a problem with? Intimacy. They heal physically. They even move beyond the memories. Intimacy. They have a trouble with intimacy. Why? Because intimacy and sexuality are combined. And here's what I want for you. I mean, here's what I long for you. And I think this is what God desires for you. Is that when you meet the person that hopefully you spend the rest of your life with, you don't just have sex. Have I already covered how many people you can have? Yeah, we've done that. It's not just sex. It's intimacy. It's to know someone fully and to be fully known fearlessly. To be fully known and to know someone else fully, fearlessly.
So I'm going to go ahead and ask kind of two questions here. With the right person, you know, versus becoming the right person myth that you speak about a lot in sex, love, sex, and dating. And then also the year off challenge. You kind of pair it with this idea of taking a year off to work on becoming this right person. So would you care to go ahead, and for those of you who don't know about the year challenge, could you go ahead and tell them a little bit about that and keep it as short as possible?
So what happens is every Saturday in wedding chapels and churches and, you know, justice of the peace all over this country, couples who really do love each other and who really do hope and mean and intend to live happily ever after make promises to each other that they are unable to keep. So the thought is, I'm going to commit myself into something I've not prepared for and I'm unable to do. And here's the myth. The myth is that somehow commitment trumps preparation, that commitment can compensate for a lack of preparation. So it's not that couples aren't committed, it's just that they've never prepared. So let's take it out of the context of relationship and say it this way. In what other area of life do people decide, I don't need to prepare, I can just commit to success? For example, college football, you know, something near and dear to our heart. So imagine Mark Richt says, hey, to the University of Georgia football team, hey, this fall, we're not going to practice. We're just going to have pep rallies. We're just going to be committed. We're going to rah-rah. We're going to promise. We're going to pray. We're going to bring in a chaplain. You know, we're going to go to a chapel. We're going to be so committed that we're going to win games. Well, everybody say that's foolish. Ellen, how many of you, you know, everybody loves Ellen. Imagine Ellen getting her staff together and saying, we're not going to prepare for the show. We're just going to commit to having a great show. Well, of course, that's foolish. We understand that's foolish in every other discipline and every other arena of life except relationships. When it comes to relationships, we think with no preparation, I can simply make a promise. And somehow a promise is going to overcome my lack of preparation. And so the commitment myth is somehow commitment is enough. But commitment in relationships is completely overrated. I want to read one sentence from the book real quick, because I can't ever quote this correctly, but I kind of think this is worth the price of the book. All right, it's page 37 for those of you who care. Listen to this. Saying I do doesn't make a person capable, only accountable. Saying I do doesn't make a person capable of fulfilling those vows. Saying I do just makes them accountable, because once you say I do, you know, the husband or wife's like, well, you promised. So now I may not be capable of fulfilling my promise, but I'm accountable. And then here's the second part. When you're accountable for something that you're not capable of, you will eventually be miserable. When you're accountable for something that you're not capable of, you'll eventually be miserable. Algebra 2 for me, you know, I was not capable. Pretty much school for me. I wasn't capable. So the point is, it's foolish to promise something you haven't prepared to follow through on. And when it comes to relationships, most people make absolutely no preparation. That's the commitment myth.
So going along with that, a lot of people talk about your year challenge.
The year off challenge.
And so for people who don't know what it is, can we first say, what is it and then why?
Yeah, the year off challenge is, for years, I've been challenging single people to mark their calendar a year out from the time they take the challenge and decide no dating, no romance, nothing for 1 year. And the reason I challenge people to go 1 year is because I can't get people to go 2 years, because nobody's going to do that. But the idea behind the year off challenge is, this is for people who are serial daters. You know what a serial dater is?
Yes.
Somebody just relationship after relationship. Mm-hmm. This is for people who've been in several long-term relationships back to back that keep ending the same. They're just frustrated. They find themselves kind of building up anger that they just carry from one relationship to the other. This is for people who have any kind of sexual addiction, and those sexual addictions actually impact their actual relationships. You know, guys that somehow think they can smuggle porn into a long-term relationship and discover that, hey, a real body doesn't do it for me, one body doesn't do it for me, and her body doesn't do it for me. You know, what do I do? So anybody who's dealing with any of those kinds of things, has that kind of history, I say, look, just take a year off. Just take a year off. You don't have to commit to anything necessarily. Just take a breather, get out of that, and begin to use a Bible term, to renew your mind, to learn how to think different. For guys, it's learning how not to view women as a commodity. For women, sometimes it's how to not view men sometimes as a safety net or a financial safety net, or, you know, whatever it is that, you know, the particular young woman may be bringing to these relationships, where she thinks, why is it I'm always attracted to the wrong kind of guy? Well, you need a year to figure that out, because, you know, you've heard me say before, if four relationships in a row all end the same way, you have to ask the question, what was the common denominator in these four relationships? Well, that would be you. So if you're the common denominator and all of your relationships end the same, you need some time off. So the year off challenge is to challenge people to just take a breather, get out of the scene. Sometimes people say, well, what am I supposed to do during that year besides be bored? And I think the answer to that question is as specific as the person. Everybody probably needs to approach that year a little bit different depending on what they're trying to overcome or the habit they break. But the easy answer to the question and as to what should I do during that year is you do during that year what you would want the person you hope to meet in a year to do if they were taking a year off. So whatever you, you know, whatever you hope that person out there somewhere that you're going to meet someday is doing during their year when they're getting their act together, getting their mind together, learning to think differently, just do that. And chances are at the end of that year, you will be a better person and you will be in a better position to prepare to become the person that the person you're looking for is actually looking for. You just decide what, again, it's preparing to commit. It's preparing to commit. It's becoming the person that the person I'm looking for is looking for. I know who I'm looking for, but am I the person that I'm looking for is looking for? So what should I do for my year off? You stay active, you stay social, you get involved, you volunteer, you do all kinds of cool stuff. But if you're Christian, you say, God, renew my mind. I want to view women the way you view women. God, I want to view men the way you view men. God, I want to learn to view sex the way that you created sex to be viewed. I want to renew my mind so that when I go back into this complicated world of male and female and sexuality and all this stuff, that I'm a different person.
There's so many people in the room and they have so many friends and there's so many different worldviews out there right now. Do you truly feel like Christianity sets you up best for dating or marriage?
Well, I'm a Christian, so you might expect me to say yes, so yes. But here's why. And this is so powerful. And if you're not a Christian, just consider this. I'm not trying to convert you. The most powerful relational dynamic in the whole world. I'm telling you, this is the secret. The most powerful relational dynamic in the whole world is found in the New Testament. It may be found some other places, but it's found in the New Testament. And I refer to it as mutual submission. Now, the church has gotten a bad rap about men, women submit to your husbands and women are supposed to be submissive. That's people who didn't read the verse before that. Here's what the New Testament teaches. And you don't have to be a Christian to try this. Mutual submission says, I am here for you. And Sandra says, but Andy, I'm here for you. And I go, no, no, no. I'm here. Nah. And we argue about it. And we try to out-submit each other. It's awesome. Okay, That is what mutual submission is. And this is a principle that is at the essence of Christianity. It removes the, well, she doesn't deserve it. Because in a Christian marriage, that is 100% irrelevant. So yes, I think it makes a huge, huge difference. I would say become a Christian and a Christ follower just for the relational principles, even if you're not convinced Jesus is the Son of God. I would say follow Jesus just because of what the New Testament teaches relationally, in spite of where you think, where what you believe specifically about Jesus. It is that powerful.
If you had to say one more thing to the singles in this room, what would you say to them?
In closing, I would say just please remember this. That every date, every kiss, everything that's a part of all of this becomes a permanent part of your story. And one day, you are going to want to be able to tell someone your entire story. And whether or not you feel good about your story is determined by the decisions you are making right now. You're writing a story. Write a good one.
Well, so much of what we talked about is actually in your new book, The New Rules for Love, Sex, and Dating. And thanks to Andy, every single person is walking out of here with this book. So thank you so much for being part of this night. Thank you for making this night what it was.
Absolutely. Thank
Please
you
help
so much.
Me in thanking Andy.
Thanks so much for listening to Your Move. If you've been listening for long, you know that here at Your Move, we are all about helping people make better decisions and live with fewer regrets. More people in more cities making better decisions could change culture as we know it. Visit yourmove.is to read true stories of life change, see what else Your Move has to offer, and find out how you can be a part.